You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Trek This Out.
His life signs are normal. A few elevated serotonin readings in the hypothalamus. From what I can tell, he's just asleep.
Can you wake him?
I don't see why not. Wake up, Lieutenant!
Are you all right, Tom?
Okay. Welcome to Trek This Out podcast. I'm your host today. I'm Jen. I'm here with Deb, Suki and Drew to discuss an award-winning episode of Star Trek. The only episode that could beat DS9's Voyager, Visitor, to an award. And it is Voyager Threshold. So, initial thoughts of Threshold. What does anybody think of it? I personally love this episode. I have my Mutant Tom action figure who goes everywhere with me. He's met Harry Kim. He has been on many photos. He is here. And I think it's a pretty good, solid sci-fi episode. The wheels come off to a certain extent towards the end. Suki, what do you think?
Well, I thought it was an okay episode until the last few minutes, right? And then it really, I think it just went off a bit of a diverging cliff there. I don't know what happened. But now you've got your little mutant, little Tom Paris. Do you have the three little salamanders? The babies.
I do have the three salamanders.
Oh,
they sit on top of my computer screen.
That is quite cute.
Oh, that's very nice.
Anybody else got any thoughts on?
Yeah. I mean, Voyager is by far my favourite Star Trek series, and I love the episode as well. It's very wonky, and I'll be pointing out a lot of the silly bits. But yeah, I love it.
I just have one question: why did you make me watch that? Really, I'm really tired, you know, and it's been a busy weekend with beer festivals and Leicester won. No, we didn't. It just felt like that. It was a draw. So I had that to contend with as well. So I sat down this afternoon and, yeah, what? That's all I can say at the moment. I only stopped watching it about three quarters of an hour ago, and my head is still full of jelly and eels, whatever, jellied eels and space newts. What the fuck? Really?
Salamander newts. Salamanders.
Space newts.
Space mutant newt lizards. Yeah.
It was a load of rubbish.
So ringing endorsement there.
Yeah.
So any deeper thoughts on the episode? I say when it starts off with a really good solid sci-fi concept. It's let's go see how fast we can go. Let's get home quicker.
But even then, they're doing it in the holodeck. Surely that's not going to tell them whether the nacelles will fall out. All it will do is all the computer's knowledge will be what human knowledge is, what it's been put in, what information. It's already got in the systems. So I'm not quite sure whether doing something like that on the holodeck is actually going to be any help to knowing whether the nacelles are going to fall off or not, really. So, yeah, silly.
Well, the answer to that, Deb, is the same answer to all questions, and that's mathematics, because you can program all the variables and then test things out, can't you? It's what we do in real life. We make mathematical models and we test stuff, and then if it passes that test, we move it into the real world. It is a bit of a silly beginning. Now, the thing I don't like about the beginning is why, when like the shuttle explodes, like everything just stops and he's sitting on the floor all of a sudden. You don't need to do that, really, do you? But it's a classic Voyager beginning, isn't it? Like lots of techno babble and you know, quantum warp theories and multi subspace engine designs. I really like the cold open.
Yeah, because whatever you design, you'd run a simulation now. So this is the next level simulation, the holodeck. The sitting on the floor at the end is a major flaw in holodeck design, but
you run a simulation, but the computer can only come up with the facts that it's been programmed in, and I'm sure they've got a calculator.
But I'm just thinking, maybe if they're taking some of the safety protocols off, some of the safe, and all of a sudden the computer hologram just decides this is actually getting a bit dangerous and just cuts out anyway, and that's why he's suddenly sitting on the floor. That's all I can think of, is why he's sitting on the floor. But I understand the computer simulation. You've got to test out your theories first before you actually go out and try them out properly. And
within the limits of the information that have been programmed on the computer.
Yeah.
Well, the computer model does say that the nacelles are going to rip off, doesn't it? So they can probably work that out with their calculations, that if you put the shuttle through that much stress, it is going to be destroyed. So that is a good way for them to then try and design a better shuttle, or what do they use? They use a different material for it, don't they? Thanks to Neelix, isn't it? That scene, yes. In the, you know, we've jumped a bit, but going into that scene, so you use a classic Neelix being as irritating as he possibly can, but up with the solution.
He's a genius. He's actually acknowledged as a genius by the crew. So therefore, you know, you've got to take it as face value. They must know what they're talking about. He's a genius.
Neelix, you're a genius.
I have no idea what they just said.
I love it at the end of that whole mess hall scene when Neelix actually says he hasn't a clue what they were talking about. Well, I think that
it also helps B'Elanna's not there to actually put everything right. And then when she does walk into the scene, she's just caught the end of it. And she's just still looking with puzzled look on her face and thinking, what the hell just happened? And everybody's just vanished. And the people are calling Neelix a genius. What's going on there?
And then we move on from there to the mess hall, not the mess hall, to Janeway, you know, telling you how wonderful this wonderful idea is, and doing the traditional Star Trek trope of naming three real characters, Wright Armstrong and one fictional one, Cochrane, because you always have to have two real and one Star Trek character.
At least it wasn't Elon Musk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where was Ikara Sulu in that? I mean, there's a pilot. Nobody's disagreeing with me. Fantastic. That's it. Okay.
He's not done anything groundbreaking, though, even though he's an expert pilot. I think that is the thing, isn't it? The other people on there, the Orville Wright and Neil Armstrong and Cochrane, have actually like broken boundaries, haven't they?
Oh, man. Don't go around putting a downer on my suggestion there.
All right, then. So, what about who was driving the Enterprise every time it crashed? Oh, Marina Sirtis. Yeah. Troy. So, yeah, Troy must be, because she's good at breaking spaceships.
Definitely broke a few things, yeah. And then we move on from there to the bedroom scene. What's Tom wearing?
Okay, that bedroom scene was a bit weird in that Tom's lying there in his dressing gown and then he goes, come in. And for some reason, only then he decides when the captain's walking that he's got to flip him. Have a bit of modesty about him and stand up and pretend. I mean, if it had been anybody else, would he just lie there, casually let his dressing gown slightly open up, or show a bit of leg? But no, it's only when she walks in and realises it's the captain, that's when he shows a bit of modesty.
Yeah, this scene always like feels to me really out of place. I mean, what is it about? Because she says, oh, you've got an enzymatic imbalance, so you might not be able to fly the shuttle. But then later on, it is a very quick one line. She does say, oh, was it the imbalance, to the doctor? And he says, oh, no, it wasn't that. Plus, Janeway gets turned into a salamander, yes, at the end, cutting to the end. So it was. So what was this scene about? Why did they put it in? Because it doesn't really have any impact on the rest of the episode, does it? Jen?
My personal theory is that she didn't want to risk Tom. Harry Kim is disposable. Send him out. Who cares if we lose him? We were never going to promote him anyway. So, you know, he's the one to send out.
I think it was the point was it gave Tom a point to say, I want to do this because I need to prove myself, because my dad, for some reason, he went to a school where everybody went, Tom Paris is really going to do something good in his life. And from what you said, they hadn't got his head flushed down the toilet at the same time. I mean, what a weird school. But yeah, I think it was a chance for him to say, I really want to do this, and why, and what the pressures were from his dad, and that, and how he felt that his life had gone wrong.
It's a very, very valid point, Deb. Perhaps that is exactly what it is, to get that scene out with Tom. And I equally agree that that is weird, isn't it? Is anyone else, like, school had people who would go around saying, oh, Tom Paris is going to do something special? That it just does not sound like school kids, does it, at all? Very strange school.
Yeah, usually if school kids tell you you're special, it doesn't mean what he thinks it means.
That scene, though, actually, I'm just thinking maybe it was a bit of a filler scene, just to give a bit of a... This ain't really much of a story, to be honest. There isn't much of a story there. So they might have just used a bit of some scenes there to pad it out a bit and just show a bit of conflict between Janeway and Paris about her trying to stop him from going on this this test drive. I just think it might have just been a bit of filler.
I don't know. Maybe it was the sexy dressing gown that inspired her to be sexually aroused later when they were both space nudes. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, what is this episode? It was all kind of weird. The only thing I can think of is that it was supposed to be Tom Paris trying to establish himself and feeling that he had something to prove. And, well, in the end he did, because he was the first person to become a space newt. And he founded a new species. So, you know,
whatever. Oh, yes, I have a theory about that.
This new species, one minute it's devolving, and then next there's the scene where the doctor says he's evolving into the next bit of the human race. But it seems to be like it just doesn't seem to make sense within the context of the story. And they're going backwards, or they're going forwards in the evolution of humans, or I don't know.
My personal theory, I have a few personal theories on this episode. Now, these space newts, lizards, whatever, were abandoned on a planet. There was an unfortunate incident with a wormhole. They were taken back in time to the Alpha Quadrant, founded the Cardassian civilization, had abandonment issues that didn't like humans, which led to their hatred of humanity, which in turn led to the Dominion War. So basically, Janeway is responsible for the Dominion War.
I like it.
Well, Janeway, I think you'll find that it's Chakotay who leaves them on the planet. I mean, well, this is why we've got the Prime Directive, isn't it? Why is he not obeying the Prime Directive and removing all the babies? Well, I like how we jumped to the end, but never mind.
These three salamander babies at the end, okay, he's left them behind. Now, Jen's just gone on about to maybe the beginning of the Cardassian race, but what's to say that they weren't the beginning of the human race? Somebody could have also just put them into the wormhole, took them 4 million years in the past to Earth and left them there. And the next thing you know, those three little babbies suddenly populated humanity or created humanity. What's to say there's a big, massive time loop going on there?
So what are we saying, that that's the future of human evolution, which to me doesn't make any sense? Why would we evolve into like what looks like animals that didn't look intelligent? And I don't know. But you're saying we're going to evolve into them and then later on evolve back into humans? That just doesn't make any sense, does it? Lot of this episode.
True. It's not real. It's not a documentary.
You sound like my wife. My goodness.
actually, I don't know if this is true, but there's somebody who actually wrote a paper on this thing altogether. Jen, you can explain it all to me.
In fact, the paper is Rapid Genetic and Developmental Morphological Change Following Extreme Celerity.
Well done.
Thomas Paris, Harry Kim, Blana Torres, Keza Camper, Catherine Janeway, and Lewis Zimmerman. And published in American research journals of Journal of Bioscience.
But I think they were trying to highlight some pretty shitty periodicals.
It was these predatory peer review. Mohammed Noah wrote it, didn't it, for some of the predatory journals that are out there. But yes, I have the paper up.
Does it make any sense? Did you read it?
Yes, it and is did... basically the episode of Voyager written out with references.
So let's jump back a bit, shall we? Because we missed out a bit.
Do we have to?
Episode,
hold on, do we have to? I mean, you know, we could just skip to the end and go, well, let's have our feedback now.
We could talk about something else.
We ain't got no news.
I've got plenty to talk about.
No, oh, sorry. Hold on. This is Jen's favourite episode. Now, let's not go around.
Absolutely.
No, we've got her on the podcast. Let her do all the talking. We'll just sit back.
Seriously, it's your
anyway,
favourite
sorry.
Episode.
Drew.
Your favourite series, but, I mean, favourite episode?
It's I wouldn't say it's my favourite episode, but it is one of those episodes that is a comfort watch. I will go and watch it. Bat and Sub Rosa. If I just want something to watch to have fun, these are the episodes I go to.
100% agree. Yeah, I think it's a comfort episode as well. I've watched this so many times. Probably might be one of my most watched Voyager episodes, actually. Yeah, so they then go to the launching of the shuttle, don't they? And Tom's going to make this flight. And Janeway says, open the space doors. Do you notice that? Have you ever heard the shuttle bay doors called space doors before? I think this is the start, I've got a theory, of where things go wrong with this episode, where they start getting a bit wonky, because no one in Star Trek calls the shuttle bay doors the space doors, do they? It's almost like whoever wrote this, and I did have a quick look, I can't remember the person's name, but I don't think they wrote any other episodes, but it's like they don't quite know Star Trek very well, and they're just like doing like kind of weird things.
Brandon
Braga,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Brandon Braga with the original play. And Michael DeLuca was the actual one who came up with the story.
So then the shuttle flies off, doesn't it? So they do the test flight. And there's that weird bit where, like, the shuttle, like, we're listening to Tom and he goes to, he gets to warp 10. And then the shuttle disappears, isn't it? And why do they all go like, oh, no, it's disappeared? Yes, because he's at warp 10. Why are you surprised that a shuttle going at infinite velocity would disappear off of all the scanners? You know, that is what you would expect, isn't it? I've got a real problem with this as well, because infinity, you can't have infinite velocity. Infinity is not a number. It's you know, it's a concept. You cannot travel at infinite velocity, can you?
What about infinite improbability?
Well, again, that's just a story thing, isn't it? You couldn't have that in reality. I know it's not reality, dear, but, you know.
The infinite improbability drive is actually a warp 10.
Is it?
Yeah. Mm. Maybe not, but...
Hey, who let someone clever on our podcast?
Well, it would happen sometime or another. You know, it just happened to be on this episode.
The other thing that crossed my mind while I was watching this episode is, do they have a hairdresser on board? Because, I mean, Janeway's hair is always pretty perfect. Even when she woke up after being a newt, her hair was impeccable.
It was phenomenal. I looked at their hair and I was thinking she's been under the, under the slime and probably under her flipping port on Paris as well. And the next thing, her hair is just magnificent. And I noticed it when she was in the little scene at the beginning where they're all the crew sitting around the table discussing it. And then a bit further on, her hair is always magnificent. I love her hair. I don't know why, but I just love her hair.
You know, I'm sorry, I know, Drew, but I may have said this before. I was once sat behind Princess Anne, who has that bun thing, but it's even more, it is just a bun. There wasn't a hair out, and I was directly behind her. And I just had this great urge to pick my finger up and just touch the hair, because I thought it was so perfect that you would go ding, but I managed to resist. But yes, it's similar sort of hair.
It probably would have gone ting, wouldn't it? Because it's famously the bun of steel, isn't it? But yes, also, and she's got full makeup on as well, isn't it? Do you reckon the doctor, like when she was unconscious, was slapping on the makeup so that once she wakes up, she's going to look really good?
Probably one of these other programmes that he's written for himself.
Yeah, definitely.
Medical programme, hairdressing programme.
But again, we've jumped some bits here, haven't we? Because yeah. we've jumped a great scene, and that is when Tom comes back, and he's in the medical bay, isn't he? Go on, Jen. You carry
this
on.
This is one of my favourite scenes. One of my favourite doctor lines in the whole of it. When you've got Tom unconscious, and doctor's made some comments about drinking Neelix's coffee, and then Janeway tries to wake him up. Oh, says, can you wake him up? So obviously, you know, it's always get a hyperspray, wake him up. And the doctor just shouts, wake up, Lieutenant. That just always amuses me every single time.
And it says that he's got very few life signs. And the next minute, they just had to go, wake up. I didn't get that anyway. But yes, it was funny.
The doctor in this is, I think, the best character in the whole episode. He has some fantastic lines. Obviously, that one where he goes, wake up. There's a bit where after he's collapsed, Tom's collapsed, and they're telling me he drank nearly his coffee, and he goes, it's a miracle he survived. and then there was something about where the Tom is going, I've saw everything. I was here, there, everywhere. I saw everything. And he goes, I'm glad you had a good time. And I'm going back to that scene where he's actually experienced being everywhere. It's how can he remember everything at once? You can't possibly remember everything. He maybe remember certain things, but you can't go around saying I was on Earth, I can be on Kronos, I could be on the Cardassian home planet, I could be everywhere, and I experienced everything. The thing
you're absolutely right. Yeah. Because I was in that state after the beer festival last night, and I can guarantee you're right.
You got well. The other thing as well, I was wondering about that scene, and this is my puerile and stupid schoolboy humour. I wonder if you saw anybody taking his shit. Yeah, you know, as he's flipping on the Enterprise. Oh, looks Tuvok having a poo.
Thank you. My school girl sense of humour is when he's grown an extra organ. I went, oh, it's a heart.
Oh, when he says grown an extra heart, it's an extra heart. And I went, Time Lord, it's a Time Lord.
Oh, yes, we all did, yes.
Yes, first thought is, oh, so he's not Klingon now. And then it was Time Lord.
yeah, that was similar.
Yeah, the Doctor in this is the best character, 100%. Yeah, them lines, I had them all written down, you've done them all. And there's one more I'm going to add, which is when Tom's doing his long monologue about losing his virginity. And I lost my virginity at 17 in that room. And the doctor says, make a note in your medical file. The doctor is so good in this. It's unbelievable.
One other line that I wanted to mention was crying is not in my program. Right. Okay, fair play. He's not in his program. But the thing was, he's a medical hologram. Therefore, he's like a computer and he can go around doing things at the speed of a computer. Why is he sitting at a terminal tapping away? Right. Does he need to be sitting at a terminal tapping away in the middle of the night or in the darkness? He could just probably just think it and it's already zapped into the computer somewhere.
Yes, this is 100% what I always think. Why is the doctor saying, computer, erect a force field, computer, remove the air? Surely he is the computer. He doesn't need to vocally give the computer orders, does he?
Yeah, that's my problem with the doctor for the entire of Voyager. So he's the computer, but he's not the computer. So why can't he just do the computer things? Why does he have to tell them? I was going to say, the other great is not Dr. Line, but it's just an eye roll as Tom says, kiss me to Kes, not you, her. And the doctor's face of that is just perfect.
I mean, I would say the one thing about the doctor and giving commands, just very quickly, is I guess when he's in the mobile emitter, he's separate to the computer. You could kind of understand him giving the computer orders and that. But yes, this is another very wonky bit. This whole Tom like monologuing about his virginity and his dad and the pizza and kiss me. It's terrible. It's a terrible bit of the episode. And I feel quite sorry for Robert Duncan McNeil because he's acting his heart out, but it's awful material he's got there.
Okay, just going back to the Doctor. Yeah, every episode of Voyager we're going to discuss, we're always going to say Robert Picardo is the best actor playing the best character on the episode. That's all I'm going to say. So we might have to keep moving on from that each episode. But Robert Duncan McNeil, yeah, he's had some really he must have had some really poor time filming this episode, because as Drew says, that was that scene in the sick bay where he's going through his monologue, and then a bit later on where he's feeling all sorry for him for himself with the full mutant makeup on him, and he's spouting off at how the crew think bad things about him behind his back and all this stuff, and he's just I can see why it's not regarded as a good dialogue episode for some of the characters.
I think he does a good job with what he's got to do, so he's not hammy or anything. But about the doctor not needing to say, I mean, to be honest, I really was watching it going, what the fuck is going on here? What's this about? If the doctor didn't actually speak out loud for the sake of us, I think it would be even harder to work out what was happening.
Dave, you've come up with an excellent second point. Yeah, of course that's why he does it. It's for the narrative of the episode, isn't it? That's excellent. Yeah. Excellent. I'm impressed. I just want to pick you up, Saki, on saying about Robert Picardo being the best actor. I'm sorry, I think Jeri Ryan is up there as well. I mean, I know she's obviously, there's no Seven in Voyager in season two so far, but she's good as well. She's really good.
Well, I know she's good. I mean, we've seen her all seen her in Picard and stuff, right? And don't think I've seen many episodes of Voyager when she joined. I think of how many episodes have we reviewed for the podcast with Jeri Ryan in? Maybe only a couple.
I think they might have predated me and Drew.
So now we've got the bit, the great bit. We're going to body horror, don't we? Because next is the tongue coming out, isn't it? I'm surprised they got away with so much of this on you know, like American TV.
Yeah, first of all, the hair comes off, and it's pretty horrific, to be fair. But yeah, when the tongue comes out, that really marks the wheels falling off the episode and everything just going basically batshit crazy. Even though it was, yeah. There was issues before, but that really marks a turning point in the episode, I think. But I think Robbie does, you know, acts his heart out through some, you know, and the makeup, let's face it, is pretty good. Because obviously that's what it won the Emmy for.
Okay. Okay, so this is what I've been wondering. When you said an award-winning episode, yeah, right at the beginning.
It was up against The Visitor for the Emmy for the best makeup. And it won. So, yep, officially a better episode than The Visitor.
Right, okay.
Well, the makeup.
For the makeup, yes. For yeah, everything else.
So, yes, he goes flaky and then his tongue falls out. But he could still talk.
Well, croak.
You know what? I mean, I know I'm going all over the place again, but I wrote down at this point, they're going to stick him in the transporter, aren't they, and put all his DNA back again. So it gets a point just for not using the transporter.
Well, they don't, do they? They take him to the warp drive for the warp core, for the anti-proton radiation treatment, don't they? Now, my question here is, why are the restraints on that thing so piss poor that he can get out so easily? Because that's terrible, isn't it?
It is a bit piss poor. But the other thing is, why didn't they film the action scene? Why did they just have the camera on a blank piece of wall with a certain laser and some sound effects in the background?
It is the massive, we spent all our money on the makeup, we can't afford to do the action scene. So let's have it all off camera with a phaser shot across it and a couple of guys running. That really stood out this watch. I hadn't really noticed that much before.
It's so cheap, isn't it? It really does stick out once you notice it.
So the other bit in that scene as well, is that the character in the background, Raphael Sabarge, who's playing, I don't know what the name of the character is, right, but he's the one that goes around giving information to that alien race. What's that alien race?
Kazon.
Kazon. Right, so he's actually giving information. Does anything actually come and happen with that in the end?
It's a bit of a subplot, you know, where he's giving, feeding them information, because you got Seska with them one of the characters that turns out to be a Cardassian spy. So yeah, it does play out, but unfortunately, this is the trouble with having episodic TV that's got like 2 minutes of continuous bits in it, that it just sticks out again in the episode, doesn't it? It's like, what was that bit about? You know, especially when you're watching out of order like we have.
Yeah, it's that we're going to make a vague attempt at serialization, but we can't do it properly. Sorry about the cat.
That's all right. We've had pets.
I thought it was a sub-Rosa type ghost coming in when I just saw your door open.
Door open in the background. We don't mind.
We like cats.
She sees this like recording on. She has to be part of it. So, yeah. tried to touch her out, but it wasn't working. Yes, it felt the serialization, they're not very good at it in Voyager, are they? And it felt so forced, that scene. You just could have got rid of it and it would have made no difference whatsoever.
So next, what we've got is there's the mutant Tom walking around, escaped from the warp car. And so what do? They have Janeway walking down a corridor on her own, don't they? So of course she gets attacked. Does anyone find that a bit silly? She should have had Tuvok security with her, really, shouldn't she?
She's come back.
Yeah.
yes, and it was there was no security in that area. What a coincidence. Don't send her out. She's all right. Addy. I tell you, when Kat was on, her cats were howling like mad, so we'll be fine.
And all across the screen and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that. Janeway, this is where, as I say, this is where it suddenly went off. I mean, it was a good episode going up to there. You know, you suddenly hit a certain barrier and there's been consequences for hitting that barrier, which genetically has changing somebody's DNA. No problem. But the fact that Tom Paris's character,
No problem.
He goes paranoid and everything, and he just doesn't want to. He thinks everybody's against him, and then on top of that, he decides he's going to kidnap somebody. Now, as he already got it in the back of his head, that is this, as he's going paranoid, that he's actually going to take Janeway as a mate, or because if he'd have taken a male member of the crew. What was he going to do then? It ain't going to make then. So I'm just assuming why take Janeway instead of some random female crew member as they're walking past? Why take the captain? I was just disappointed with this last 5-10 minutes of the episode. Really was.
I'd say if he's only disappointed with the last 5-10 minutes, then he's probably done quite well.
No, but okay. I'm not... It's a poor episode, but it was an episode which had a bit of sense to it in that, as I says, Tom had got to a certain point in getting a warp 10 and he's done it, but it's got consequences involving his DNA, right? That's no problem. And then... Within the confines of sci-fi, it's not a problem. You know, something happens when you've hit this certain barrier. Not a problem. It's just when they decide they're going to... when they're going to do the kidnapping of Janeway and then the mating thing with Janeway, it becomes a problem for me. Go on, Jen.
This is the bit where the episode really kind of falls down for me, but...
Yes!
Finally.
She agrees, yes.
Yes. And to be honest, if Tom was taking somebody to mate, you'd have thought, given his previous history and everything had gone on in Voyager before, he'd have taken Kes. It was actually in sick bay and would have been an easier one to take, but
I just think he just happened to come across Janeway, and that's why he took her, and there wasn't any mating going to be done. But then, you know, once they both become the de-evolved or evolved salamanders, the urges took over.
Was he in a relationship with B'Elanna at this point? Because she rushes in quite, you know, Tom into the sick bay. As if she, you know, like there were a couple or something before he goes, "I'm okay," and she's, that's it, stops. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I don't think they hadn't become a couple at that point. So maybe this was the start of it. Maybe she liked lizards. I don't know.
So there's another bit which is one of them. Once you've noticed that, it kind of a little bit ruins the episode at this point, though. So Tom gets on the shuttle and then flies away. Oh, but just before he does, though, we cut to the bridge, and you've got Kim and Chakotay. Like, Chakotay's in charge now, and Kim says, "Oh, there's a decompression in Shuttle Bay 2, or 1, Shuttle Bay 2. And Chakotay goes, "What?" Like, really exaggeratingly bad acting. Robert Beltran is off his marks on this episode. There's a couple of bits, and that's the first one. It's almost like that bit in Deep Space Nine. It's a fake. He does such an exaggerated "What?" And the other bit is once the shuttle does fly off, and again, you know, "Oh, it's disappeared." Well, no shit, Sherlock. It's going at infinity velocity, isn't it? And Robert Beltran does like a Joey from Friends, like trying to calculate a big number in his head, acting of like looking all like, "Oh no, what's going on?" He's really not on his A game in this episode, Robert Beltran, in my opinion.
And to be fair, he didn't have a lot to do anyway, so he obviously just rocked up for the couple of lines he had. And
I think his best bit was actually, sorry, I think his best bit was when Tom Paris actually vanishes to when he does the initial test, and Janeway stands there, and the camera starts suddenly zoom in. He stands up in the background, and I think, "Oh, that's it. That's a proper Riker moment, that. He's standing up right behind your captain."
Yeah, so now what we get to is like the big scene, isn't it? Because 3 days later, they found the shuttle. It's not got very far, is it, going at infinity velocity? It could have like been on the other side of the universe going at that speed, but never mind. They find
the
shuttle.
Well, they had the foreplay, didn't they? They had to do all the foreplay and work out where their rude bits were.
I guess so. And they go down, and we've now got two salamanders instead of two members of the human race, haven't we? And the three babies come out of the... they go into the pond, don't they? Don't come out the pond. And this is the bit, like we discussed before, why would they ever leave them on the planet? Because the Prime Directive says no interference, doesn't it? Well, what do we think of that?
Is that planet inhabited? Is it just a planet that the two salamanders have just rocked up on? And if it's uninhabited, maybe Takata has made the decision, says it's uninhabited, leave them there. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I just don't know what they're thinking.
How does a space nuke pilot a space shuttle? Because they haven't got hands and they can't speak.
I thought he was going to ask another question then about reproduction, to be honest. I was going to say, it's not a detail.
Well, it's sort of bollocks, really, isn't it? So,
yes.
I don't want to know the birds and bees version of salamander sex. No.
Yeah. Well, we know he was growing extra organs, so, yeah. It's all just bad.
We get to the final scene, which is the final terrible scene again. It's back in, like we said, back in the medical bay, isn't it? Where they've got they're all coiffed up. Even Tom Paris's hair looks done, doesn't it? He looks like he's had a bit of a do done there, and Janeway in her makeup. And again, we get another bit of a tiny monologue from Tom, doesn't it? And telling about how he's really shaken with it all. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm not surprised at all." And Janeway, when he says, "You know, all I can do is like apologize for it." And Janeway says, "Oh, you know, for all we know, it might be like the female that initiates the mating." And then she says, like, you know, about, "Oh, I thought about having children, but like, I didn't intend to have them with you. Anyway, I'm going to give you a condemnation." And yeah, she's going to reward him like after going through all that. It's just crazy, isn't it? This whole episode.
Commendation.
Commendation, yeah.
I mean, they probably should have been condemned for it, but cut that scene out of the episode. It's a whole better episode. It's an awful scene. After all the sort of trauma, trying to, you know, how difficult it was to try and turn him back into a human, and suddenly it's just like, "Oh yeah, we're back, it's sorted, let's skip on all the techno babble and how we actually did it. It just happened. It was great."
This is my final comments. I didn't manage to write much about this. it just goes, oh, they are better. And then I've put in bins, why?
This is another like classic Voyager thing, isn't it? The big reset button. And they really do it here, because you're absolutely right. There's no explanation, just, oh, and they all lived happily ever after.
That end scene, Tom Paris has been begging to do this test run. He's, I mean, Janeway's come up to say, you're not doing it. And then he goes, I need to do it. I need to prove things. Oh, you know, all this stuff. Then halfway through the episode, he's, after it's all done, he's all paranoid about the crew and all this stuff. Then a bit later on, he's, I don't want the praise or whatever. I think it's something. It just seemed his character was up and down the whole episode. It's like, I know this is the second season. His character should have been bedded in by now, slightly bedded in by now. They should know what his character is. But somebody within that writing staff was going from one extreme to the other on just that one character. And it just doesn't make a great episode for the character. The actor, he did what he could with that story. But the characterization of him in this is just terrible. Absolutely terrible. Sorry, Jen. I mean, I know it's your favourite episode. But...
Oh, I love it. Still love it.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
So do we have ratings? Do we have lights out of five you want to give it? It's an episode. I love it. It's one of those comfort episodes that I will go to and watch again and again. It's got the sciences ropey, to say the least. There are some major flaws in the, you know, plot flaws. There are problems with it. But I still love watching it. So I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 abandoned lizard babies.
I'll go next then. I'm going to give it 2. And one of those is just for not using the transporter to reset his DNA.
Yeah, Voyager's my favourite. I've watched this one loads and loads. I love it as well. There's no two ways about it. It's wonky writing and terrible bits in it, but I'm sorry, I really, really like the episode. I'm surprised you're only giving it a 3, Jen, because I'm going to give it a 4.
I know, I was actually meant to say 4. I don't know why I said 3, because I've got 3 lizard babies in front of me.
So it is 4 for Jen as well, then.
It is 4.
It was an okay episode up until at least 10-15 minutes towards the end, when it just went wrong. Something happened in the writing, it just went wrong. So I can't give it, I mean, Jen and Drew, 4 out of 5 for this episode. I can't give you as high as that. I'm going to go stick with Deb, actually. I'm just going to give it a 2 because I think this was shit. Sorry.
The thing about this episode is, you know, it's renowned as like the worst episode of Star Trek, like so many of these other ones are, like Sub Rosa and all that lot. But it clearly is not the worst episode of Star Trek, and I'm going to defend it like I did Sub Rosa and that lot. It's not boring and it's not unentertaining. It's just, it's got really weird, silly, funny things in it. So that doesn't make a bad episode for me, because it's entertaining, even if it's entertainingly bad.
Yeah, there's plenty of worse episodes, and Threshold, whatever you say about it, it's memorable. People know it. Other episodes like Unforgettable are basically forgettable, and if they never existed, nobody would even notice. They're bad episodes. Threshold is at least is whether you like it or not, people remember it. So it can't be all bad.
Okay. Okay. I will say it was shit then. But I will say, as I keep saying, it's an okay episode. There's a good sci-fi storyline all the way through it, except for the whole salamander bit. It's just tagged on, and it just ruins the whole episode. If that hadn't been there, and they somehow managed to make him back to human using either the transporters or some sort of potion or whatever to get him back to normal, it would have been okay. But the fact that they added that little... I don't know if they decided they got these salamander costumes lying around, we would need to try them out. Or they decided we need to do a little bit of CGI, because those are little CGI creatures. So they might have decided we're going to try a bit of CGI, see if this works on the episode as well. We will experiment with that. Maybe for a better episode, we'll be able to do the CGI a bit more. But I just think I think they must have decided we're just going to experiment. And some the experiment just went off slightly, just like within the episode where it suddenly changed the poor Tom Paris's DNA.
I like things that are entertainingly bad. This wasn't it. Perhaps I am tired after the beer festival. And from what I'm getting the gist from what Suki says, is like, apart from the dialogue, the DNA mutation and the baby space lizards, it was all right. 2 points. we're polite to our guests. It's shit.
We are always polite to our guests. Jen, we are, we're just making a commentary on the actual episode, not on your choice. It was shit, though.
So anybody got any more thoughts on it before we go on to the listener feedback?
Can I just end on a line that I missed out that I meant to say when we was going past a bit in the episode? It's another Dr. Zinger, and it was the bit when they is talking about Tom Paris being evolved, and he said, it's possible that Mr. Paris represents a future state in human development, although I can't say it's very attractive.
Yeah. There was also a bit where he was about to die, and he goes, something tells me we should hurry. And you're going, yeah. Listen up!
So now we've heard what we think about Voyager, let's have a look at some of the listeners' feedback. So I will start with some feedback from Dave Kay. So, Threshold, this episode is from just after I gave up on Voyager when it was first broadcast. So once again, I've gone and watched the episode for the first time just for you guys. Well done, him. Oh boy. I know that Star Trek is fiction, and sometimes has ideas which can push our suspension of disbelief, but this was packed with them. First, you can't go past warp 10, as warp 10 is an asymptote. Secondly, changing DNA doesn't turn you into something, it just gives you a lot of cancer. Thirdly, that's not how evolution works. Any of these alone would hurt an episode, but packing them all in here just to turn the gas into salamanders is stupid, and frankly, embarrassing. And the execution is so silly that there's no tension or even humour, just banality. The problem is, this is what I imagine a lot of Voyager is like, a franchise desperate for ideas and happy to put any old rubbish on the screen carried by a weak cast. I'm sure that most episodes of Voyager are better, as I know it has a lot of fans, but this really fuels my bad perceptions. And all the talk about Tom's virginity and the captain mating with Paris made it feel like it was written by a horny schoolboy. This episode isn't so bad it's good, or so bad you can laugh with it, it's just bad. It gets no lights. In fact, it's so dark it absorbs lights. So I think Dave loved it.
Definitely.
Have we had a zero in the past?
No, I don't think we have.
I don't think we have. It's our first zero, Jen. I do apologise, but that's our first zero.
Did you want to read Andrea's feedback, Deb?
Yeah, our Andrea, because I won't do a funny voice. I would if I could. From Andrea, who we are missing today. So like many bad episodes, it starts out with a reasonably solid sci-fi premise and then takes an unusual left turn, largely on the final act. The idea of travelling at ludicrous speed having a negative impact on a person isn't all that silly. It's only in the final fifth that somebody got high and decided Paris Janeway lizard babies were the ending they were looking for. It all gets fixed in a rather hand-wavy way to wrap things up neatly in time for tea. If it wasn't for those pesky kids, it might have been a more forgettable episode. But other than that, it's not actually terrible Trek. I'm in a good mood. 3 lights from me. Yeah, well, at least it looks like, despite the weather, Andrea's having a nice weekend.
And so we got some light feedback from Murray Christensen, and he says, this episode is known as the one where Paris breaks a warp 10 barrier, turns into a lizard and kidnaps Janeway to have lizard babies on a distant planet. All this stuff happens, but to be honest, if that was a plot, I'd probably be on board for the silliness. In fact, that sort of plot is my kind of nonsense. My objection to Threshold is that the plot everyone knows is basically the first and last 10 minutes of the episode. The bulk is Paris either dying in sickbay or turning into an increasingly unhinged lizard man. Done well, this could be some form of tense two-handed play between two of the cast, but instead it is Paris bouncing off either the Doctor, Kes or Janeway, and it is just dull. In many ways, Threshold's problem is not the absurd plot. We've all seen Spock's brain, or masks. It is more than this is just largely a dull, talky episode with no clear point. It seems to actively try to diffuse any drama or tension, and that is its actual crime. Always look forward to the podcast and look forward to whatever you are looking at next. Cheers for that, Murray. Thank you.
So that's it for feedback, isn't it? So that's I think that also says something about the episode that, like, we've had only two people prepared to watch it this week and send in feedback. Oh, dear.
Yes. It's not that bad.
Jen, I'm a big defender.
Defend it by saying it's not that bad. I like it.
I like it as well.
Yeah.
This is it. You know, we have gone onto a little curveball where we've just gone around picking really bad, badly regarded episodes within fandom. And so some people are going to go out of their way to watch episodes, even if they're bad or if they're not well-liked. And unfortunately, just this week, I do apologise. I mean, normally we do get a lot more feedback than this.
Oh, everyone's obviously just mutating into lizards and not watching it, so...
People can still feedback on the pods. We're not saying that we're rubbish, please, but it might spark off some thoughts about what we said.
Well, we have had quite a few thoughts on last week's episode.
All right.
The Northern Ireland line that was in the that episode that you posted up about where the BBC said it was a banned episode.
All right.
Well, there's quite a bit of feedback going on about that online.
Good. It's all down to
Dave Kay, and he's got a conversation going with a few people.
Thank you, Dave Kay, for your service.
Even though you didn't like this episode, I'll let you on.
But you watched it.
But you watched it, so.
You did, yeah.
So thank you.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt.
We're on to red shirts. So do we have nominations for this week's red shirt?
Well, I was going to preempt Sucky's one and vote him off. And plus, as well, I don't know whether I'm allowed to do this, but a carryover from last week. I still think you're pretty evil wanting to red shirt children. So,
oh, my God, you're still going on about that? I mean, it's been a whole week now. Can't you get over it? One whole week. I volunteered. I said one little thing about putting children into transporters and, you know, never seen them again. Oh, dear me.
So, yeah, sucky for me.
Well, I was going to pick Drew because he dissed my suggestion of Sulu being a superb pilot. All right. And now I'm also thinking Drew just can't get over the fact that over a week later, he's still going on about this one comment that I made last week. But I'm actually going to go for Jen because we had a perfectly willing fifth participant for this podcast, but she kept throwing the poor cat out the door, and I just think that's terrible. We could have had that. We needed somebody to replace Andrea, and Admiral Cornwell could have been that person, but you kept picking her up, throwing her out the door, slamming the door. The poor cat had to crawl her way back in. I just think that was terrible, Jen. You know, so you are my red shirt of the week.
I know I'm terribly mean to that poor cat. She will tell you how mistreated and how she's never fed and she never has enough food.
Oh, it's on record as well. We can
absolutely
all heard that.
Everybody knows.
Right.
So the poor little three-legged cat that has an extra limp whenever she thinks she's going to get food from somebody.
No. All right, I'll go next then. I've got to sit there because, I mean, you've got a strong case there, Suki, because I did fall in love with Addy and I think Addy could have made some very good contributions to the podcast, probably better than most of us. But no, I'm going to stick with my choice, Drew. Yeah, you're far too enthusiastic and energetic, considering the amount that I had to drink last night. And you've still got a cardboard cutout of Jason Isaacs with a pin stuck through his head, which traumatizes me. And your snazzy microphone is just sad.
It lights up.
Huh?
It's all fair points.
You've got a light up microphone.
It's reflecting.
It's reflecting. Okay. That's not so bad, though. But it's still snazzy. Go on then, Jen.
I'm deciding vote.
Oh, dear. Yeah. I'm torn. One option is obviously Deb for saying Threshold is shit, but, you know.
Now, that was me.
Sorry, that was you. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Deb. I'm blaming you.
I said it as well, I think.
Oh, you did as well. Yeah, both of us.
But I think I'm going to go for Drew because that Mask of Lorca is going to give me nightmares because it's terrifying. Drew.
That's okay.
To point out, it's got no eyes because it's a mask.
So every week that Drew has that mask on, you know, people are going to come on and just vote for you. You know, you have to decide whether if it's worth it being Red Shirt of the Week by having that mask in the background.
I just point out, this is my wife's bald, so it's actually her that's got it on.
You can't go around blaming the missus for having that on the board when you could just as easily take the pin out and go, I'm going to just put this to one side. I don't want to be Red Shirt this week.
And put some little eyes behind it.
Mind you, that might be even more terrifying. I'm not sure.
Little blue eyes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So how am I going to face my demise? I hope it's got something to do with infinite velocities.
Well, now we're going to leave you on that planet with them three little baby salamanders so you can repopulate it. Yeah, the whole planet, they need to be nurtured and brought up. And the next thing you know, they accidentally mate with you. You're just going to repopulate the whole planet. Has anybody got any better suggestions than that?
Well, I'm not sure.
That's where I was going. So
I was just going to leave him on the swamp to look after the babies. Now, the idea of a whole species of Drew lizards is quite scary, really. But let's go with it.
Yeah, can I just say, now the mask is not going to give me nightmares, Drew lizards are going to give me nightmares. I say thank you for listening. Thank you to everybody who willingly or not willingly watched the episode. Hope you found something to enjoy in it. And we'll say goodbye. And hope you, any feedback on Twitter? Can somebody tell me where?
Twitter, X, we're on Facebook, we're on Threads, we're on Instagram, we're everywhere we are.
Excellent. So anybody with any feedback, preferably, you know, just to support me that it is actually got some good in it. But no, any feedback would be, have some conversations, see what people think. It'd be great. Well, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Thanks,
there are traces of human DNA. It's them. But I have to admit, I'm not sure which one is the captain.
The female, obviously.
I don't know how I'm going to enter this into the log.
I look forward to reading it.
Competition here on the Paramount lot when auditions started 2 years ago for Star Trek Voyager, the fourth incarnation of Star Trek on television. Now, many actors were considered for the various roles, and to show you how that process works, we've asked a group of actors to recreate their audition for you. Now, out of this first group, sad to say, only one actor was actually cast in Voyager. The others had to scramble and kind of do the best they could in the business.
Captain's log, stardate 47259.3. Captain Catherine Janeway, commanding the USS Voyager. She is an untested ship with an untested crew, but I believe over time we will grow to work as an efficient and cooperative team.
Are we going to fly this thing, or are you just going to yak, yak, yak?
Captain, we're getting an order from Starfleet requesting we meet the Enterprise at Starbase 15.
Helm, set a course for 119-41 Mark 8.
Well, sure, if you want to go the long way.
Oh, no, we're not taking another one of your shortcuts. Last one, we followed your advice. We went through a tear in the time-space continuum and wound up in ancient Pompeii.
Well, we escaped, didn't we?
Yes, and my brand-new Romulan loafers were singed beyond recognition.
People, I need your focus.
Captain, we have an unidentified ship approaching at bloody hell. She's really moving.
Commander, hail the vessel. Commander?
Oh, in a second. Really? Is he cute? He's an Aldebaran?
Commander.
Aren't Aldebarians the ones with four tongues?
Sounds like this Aldebaran is about to boldly go where so many men have gone before.
I heard that.
Hey.
What do you know? They're hailing us. But it's not coming through. There's transmission problems.
Well, that's the trouble with these modern starships. My day had a simple communication system. Didn't have all these fancy flashing lights and dials, but it worked.
I know, I know. It just launched a tin can at the other ship and then pulled back until the string was taut.
But it worked.
Ooh. I believe I have an explanation for our communications problem, Captain. While we were in port, I had them install a banality filter. It keeps us from being bothered by any messages that are overly insipid or jejune.
Disengage the filter.
Oh, I can't. I can't even get my phaser to stop flashing 12 o'clock.
Excuse me, Captain. Members of my species are a bit telepathic. Perhaps I can use my powers to communicate with the alien vessel.
Lieutenant, you're not from another planet. You're from England, aren't you?
Shh, quiet. I'm getting something. It's coming through strong now. They want to attack. No. It's not an attack. It's more of a desire to embrace. No. Hold on. Captain, I believe they want to breed with us. Wait a minute. This isn't coming from out there. It's coming from in...
Well, that was fun, wasn't it? I'm sure the captain has another plan she'd like to try.
Oh, why don't you fire a photon torpedo at him?
What if they're a friendly ship?
Well, then it'll be easier. They won't shoot back.
Oh. Captain, I'm reading an energy source from the alien vessel. It's a transporter beam. We're being boarded.
Red alert. Oh, loud noise. Headache.
Captain, I'm not sure I'm reading this instrument panel correctly, but either we have a malfunction in our left turn signal or there's an armed Klingon on board the turbolift.
Shall we assume it's the latter?
Does this belong to you?
Hey, be careful with the dog. Come here, boy.
We found him on the Klingon homeworld. He was digging up azalea bushes, and we've just re-landscaped.
Sorry about that, Ballista Kerbin.
Well, yes. But next time it's intergalactic war, I vow we will destroy every molecule of the Federation.
That seems reasonable. Now do you see why we shouldn't have pets on starships?
Well, you let her have a pet. She had that big hairy thing with the horns and the three eyes.
It wasn't a pet. It was a date.
Anyway, it wouldn't have gotten out if somebody hadn't left the shuttle door bay open.
Oh, no, you don't. You're not pinning this on me. You can't expect me to pilot a starship and mind him.
Computer, engage self-destruct sequence.
What?
Self-destruct sequence.
Well, if that isn't acting out, I don't know what is.
I don't believe this.
This is all your fault.
Sorry, Suki.
But it was Drew, but you know, don't worry. He's already heard this.
This
my suggestion of Sulu, so I know who my red shirt is for later. But yes, all I'm going to say is, Fipsec, I forgot my thoughts. Go on, Drew.
Definitely.
Oh, let her wave. Where's the cat? Hello, cat. Oh, what's the cat's name?
It is Addy, which is short for Admiral Cat Cornwell.
Very good. Very good. Hello, Addy. Great name. Could have been Lorca, but yeah.
Is it female character? Female cat?
Yes.
It works.
Yes, there you go. It couldn't have been Lorca.
It
could have been a surname.
Your Lorca is a surname, isn't it?
Oh, well, if you're naming it after a male character, you I assume you've got to have a male cat. Yes? No? Mm-hmm. Well, otherwise, you're just naming it after Lorca's mother.
Yeah. Call it Mrs. Lorca.
Mrs. Lorca.
Yes, Mrs. Lorca. She was nearly, in a way.
There you go. You're going to have to change the name now.
Okay, Addy. Are you happy with that?
Don't ask the cat's opinion. Don't ask Addy's opinion. You're in charge.
Oh, no, I'm not. Absolutely.
Thank you for listening. And you can find us all on Twitter as a group. You can find us on at Trek This Out Pod, or you can go to our Facebook page at Trek This Out. Just Google that. You can find me on Twitter as Sidemount_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, Luffdee on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. Hashtag Team Basement.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as 23BDI.